into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
All right, it's Thursday's football show. We should be in a Euro 2020 playoff final tonight. Instead, Northern Ireland are there, and they're losing 1-0 to Slovakia. Bad defensive error in the first half. Slovakia 1-0 up, an hour gone there. But Scotland could be on their way to the Euros. They are 1-0 up in Serbia. Celtic's Ryan Christie with a brilliant finish from 25 yards right into the bottom corner. So Scotland on course. The Republic of Ireland, not in the playoff final. They're at Wembley, and they are getting well beaten. 2-0 at half-time. Up against England, and watching the halftime highlights, most of it has been focused on the form of Shane Duffy, who's having another one of those days that we've seen too often with Celtic over the past month. And Ireland really up against it. The goals in the first half from Harry Maguire and Jadon Sancho. Ireland had actually played quite well for the first 20 minutes on the counter-attack. Plenty of ball inside the England half, but just didn't do enough with it. Have lacked any sort of a real cutting edge in front of goal yet again. And you do worry that this could turn into a long 45 minutes. England, so much talent on the pitch and so much talent on the bench as the camera goes to Harry Kane among the substitutes. We'll get to Damien Delaney in just a minute. I just want to give you the latest scores in the Masters, because all the early starters are pretty much finished. All the later starters are out in course, and Paul Casey is the man to catch on day one. 7 under par is a good record around Augusta in recent years. 65 for the Englishman leaves him 2 shots ahead of Webb Simpson and Xander Schauffele. But then on 4 under par, Tiger Woods, the reigning champion, looking for a 16th major title, is on 4 under, a bogey-free round of 68 for Tiger. I'm watching his post-round interview. Well, he said everything was pretty much in perfect condition heading into the next 3 days. He's joined on 4 under par by another former winner, Patrick Reed. Louis Westhuizen is there as well, Lee Westwood and Hideki Matsuyama. Of the later starters, Justin Thomas has flown out of the blocks. He is 4 under par after just 5 holes. So Thomas already right in contention. John Rahm and Tony Finau in the group on 3 under par. Bryson DeChambeau finished on 2 under. Graham McDowell also in that group on 2 under par. He is currently playing his last hole. Dustin Johnson, the world number one, on 2 under after 4 holes. But it's been a slow start so far for Rory McIlroy, who dropped a shot on the opening hole, and he remains on 1 over par through 4 holes. Shane Lowry carded an opening round of 74. James Sugrue, the amateur, the British amateur champion from Mallow, is 2 over par after his opening 2 holes. We keep an eye on that. We keep an eye on all the live football. And we're going to chat to Damien Delaney, who I'm sure has a good interest in both. Good evening, Damien.
Nathan, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you keeping?
Oh, good, man. Just glued to this game like everyone else.
Are you split-screening it?
No, I'm focusing on my day job.
Good man. Good man. That's the sort of commitment we want to see. I'll keep you up to date with the golf then. If you just talk about the football and I'll watch the golf here in the corner.
I've got my notepad and everything.
Wow, wow. Go on then. Run us through. What's on your note? Have you any notes from the first half?
Yeah, a few. I need them to kind of develop a little bit more and see what goes on. I don't want to jump the gun just yet.
What happened to the commanding, dominant Shane Duffy that we have seen over the last 2-3 years for club and country? What has happened to that player?
Absolute crisis of confidence is the only thing I can put it down to, because one thing that you never thought you'd think would happen with Shane would be, you know, poor from set pieces, and not just the goal that he conceded, but I think I know he won a couple of headers in the build-up to the second goal, but if you look at it, he's actually marking Calvert-Lewin, and Maguire's at the back post with Hendricks. So the set piece has completely broken down, and I don't know how they ended up in that situation. But even that aside, the other couple of corners that he's been defending, God, he's been a long way away from Harry Maguire. And the only thing I put it down to is lack of confidence.
Have you been in that situation? I'm sure every player goes through it at some stage. And the question is always, do you take him out, or do you just have to play through it? What do you do?
You just gotta, you just got to play through it. You just have to. You're just hoping. You got to keep working hard, doing all the right things, doing all the things you should be doing. And then you're, I'd almost say, hoping that something changes or hoping that something clicks or something drops for you. And usually it could just be, I always found that it could just be one incident where he'll go up for a corner and the ball will land plumb on his head, or he'll do something fantastic in the defensive third and all that confidence comes flooding back. It sometimes can be as simple as something as that, really. But at the minute, he looks a shell, I suppose, of the player that we've come to know.
Particularly in a green jersey, because he has become this totemic figure for Ireland in recent years. There haven't been many great attacking options. He scored some big goals, but also quite often Ireland set up and end up backs to the wall, having to defend with their lives, and that's his game down to a tee. So there's an expectation around him that he's not just another player in this team, that he's a leader in this team, that he can't just have a 6 out of 10. He needs to have an 8 or 9 out of 10 every week. Do you think his decline is having an effect on the players around him?
I'll get to that, but I think first and foremost, everything you just said there is true, and it brings an awful lot of pressure with it, that he does seem to be this talismanic type character for Ireland, and maybe the weight of that is kind of weighing down a little bit mentally, you know, because once you get tired mentally, physically and emotionally, you can get drained very, very quickly as well. I don't know, I'm just kind of speculating from my experience of what I know, possibly. But, you know, the things you were talking about there about Shane performing kind of, you know, miracles for Ireland, blocking everything, heading everything, getting in the way of things. We don't see that anymore. But what's more worrying is we're not seeing the basics from Shane anymore. And all I can think of is as I said at the start, is confidence.
What are the basics you're talking about?
Man marking at set pieces. I mean, that is, you know, for Shane, that's entry-level stuff. I mean, that is, you know, I mean, if you have someone like Shane in your team, you don't even need to speak to him. You'd almost listen to him and say, Shane, what do you need here? What do you feel? Who do you want to pick up on the set plays? You know, he's one of those players where you think, we don't have to worry about him. He's fine. This is his bread and butter. And once that starts kind of slipping a little bit, and as I said, you know, there was a corner came in right after the goal, and it looked like he was kind of caught in the headlights a little bit, and he went with the wrong blue jersey. He ended up 4 or 5 yards away from Harry Maguire. Now, luckily, the ball went right out the back. But, I mean, if that ball is anywhere in the vicinity of Harry Maguire, he's going to go and attack it, and Shane's 3-4 yards away from him. So, look, I feel for him. You know, he's gone up to Celtic, and everyone said, and I remember, Todd, I think we did a show here with Joe before he went up, and one of the questions was, if he goes up there, is it just going to be kind of into semi-retirement? You know, he's not going to be playing the level of football. And my exact point to Joe was, I played with Joe Ledley in the Crystal Palace team, and I've asked the exact same questions to Joe Ledley back in the day. And Joe always said to me, it's a different type of pressure up there. It's not the pressure that you have down here. It up there, you're expected to win 3-4-0 and be 9 out of 10 every week. And if you're not, you know, it is highlighted, and that brings a certain level of pressure. And I believe that's kind of ringing true for Shane right now, that he is just not, he started brilliantly and then he came off a little bit and it looked like some criticism came his way, which is always going to happen at Celtic. Unless Shane scores every week and they keep a clean sheet and they're top of the league by 10 points, there's going to be criticism coming your way. And I'd say he is surprised and taken aback by the level of criticism he had. No, I'm talking before he kind of, I won't say fell off the side of a cliff, but before he kind of really had a drop off in form. I think he probably had a couple of mediocre games, you know, which are par for the course. It really is, where you just go in and, you know, you win 1-0 or you might lose 1-0, but you've had a decent 7 out of 10 game. But all of a sudden, the kind of spotlight falls on you, and that then can start to unravel very, very quickly. And the level of pressure that brings with it is different to what he would have had at Brighton, or probably at, you know, Blackburn or at Everton, the clubs he's been at. So he just needs to learn how to deal with that. And he will be learning. He'll be absolutely, Neil Lennon took him out of the lineup last week. I think he'll be learning from that, and he learned maybe not to take a lot of things to heart. He learned that maybe a lot of fans are saying things that they don't necessarily mean. And he just needs to, you know, just kind of take it on the chin and accept it and move through it. But I hope it drops from him soon, because he's such a great fella and he's such a good player and he's so important to Ireland. I hope it does fall for him sooner rather than later.
Yeah, if you're hearing my oohs and ahs, it's because England are absolutely buzzing at the moment and have created 2 or 3 chances even in the last couple of minutes. And within that, Ireland desperately trying to play it out from the back. The ball is with Shane Duffy. It's been played along the six-yard box from Darren Randall to Shane Duffy on the edge of his area. He's looking up, and both times he's fired it towards the halfway line, straight to an English player, and they've created a chance straight away.
Yeah.
He's had quite a transformation in the last two or three years in terms of seniority with the international side, where he's captaining the team tonight, and there is an expectation around him. But at club and country, over the last year, 18 months, an expectation for him to do something different as well. So Stephen Kenny wants this team to play a different style of football. They don't want backs to the wall Shane Duffy. He wants Shane Duffy picking up the ball and being able to start attacks.
Yep.
At Celtic, at Brighton, that's what they want. And there is always that question of if that is his game. He will, and after Ireland's first game under Stephen Kenny, came into the press conference straight afterwards and says, I know everyone says I can't do this, but I can. Can he?
Yeah, I think he can, yeah. I think he can. But what I think he needs to understand quickly is his role in the team, that it's not his role to step into midfield as he did in a couple of the earlier games and bounce passes and almost link up the play from the defence into the midfield. It's not his job. His job is to defend, and he's a very, very good defender. And he needs to understand that his game needs to be simplified to the point that he just needs to give it to the nearest shirt around him. You know, the most obvious pass, bounce it into midfield. You know, it's very important that if he's playing right side centre back, he has a right back, he has a number six, he has John Egan on one side of him, he might have a number 10, he might have a wide player tucked in. But there, your check down of options. Ultimately, your first job is get the ball. Can you give it to the right back? No, it's not on. Will I go back to John Egan? No, that's not on. Will I go back to my goalkeeper if all else fails? But you run through your check down of options very, very quickly. And then worst case scenario, you play off the front. And Ireland have a player tonight that you can play off the front to, and that is Adam Ida. So just needs to simplify his game down. I know he hasn't. I'm well aware. I'm kind of telling you what he should try mentally kind of get his brain to do. But sometimes when you get caught in a spin, you just start sliding downwards and your decision-making does go out the window. He looks like he's just caught in a little bit of a tailspin at the minute for club and country. But he's too good a player not to come out of it. And he's too mentally strong. I know he is. I know him. So I know he'll be hurting by this. I know that it'll bother him. But he's learning and he just needs to figure it out.
Yeah, it's a tough time for this to be happening for Stephen Kenny as well, because Kenny doesn't really have the options to take him out, particularly with the games coming up against Wales and Bulgaria, where Ireland really need a win from one of them at the very least to secure a second seeding for the World Cup draw. And he's probably too senior. He can't afford to drop him.
No, I don't think he will drop him, to be honest with you. I mean, let's be real as well. He's not been...
Penalty. Cyrus Christie would be thankful for Shane Duffy, because if Shane Duffy's had a bad night, Cyrus Christie's had an absolute nightmare. He was at fault for the second goal. Was he given a penalty? Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Saka, who's been brilliant for England down the left-hand side, is brought down, trying to cut in, and it's just a little stuck out the right boot, brings him down, and a chance for a third. And you'd have to say it's not against the run of play at all for England to be looking for a third goal here.
But I do agree with you with he's had a poor game tonight, but we expect so much of Shane. That's why it's spoken about so much. So I know that, like, everyone would say, you know, there are other players that don't play particularly well for Ireland, but we have such expectations for him. And I still think he'll come good. I genuinely do. I think he's too good a player not to. Here's Calvert-Lewin now with the penalty.
Yeah, Dominic Calvert-Lewin with the penalty. Darren Randolph in goal. Calvert-Lewin, relatively new to the international scene, scored on his debut. 10 minutes gone in the second half. Empty Wembley. Calvert-Lewin steps up and smashes it into the top corner. England 3, Republic of Ireland 0. 10 minutes gone. Just go off on a slight tangent. By and large, the quality of penalty kicks that we're seeing these days is exceptional.
That was. I don't think you did it enough. Gave it enough credit there for that. I mean, that was right in the top corner. I mean, that was as good as you're going to get penalty wise.
There is no way Darren Randolph is getting anywhere near that.
Absolutely not. I'm not sure if he starts, even stood on that side of the goal, he's not going to get it. It is that good. It is right in the top bin.
Vinnie Perth was on yesterday morning and saying, look, there was a definite risk of taking this game because England have so much attacking talent. And even this side that's playing, like, the first choice front three is, you'd imagine, something along the lines of Rashford, Sterling and Kane. And none of those players are playing tonight. That you could end up on the end of a bit of a beating if things didn't go well. And, like, Stephen Kenny, if he's had any luck so far, it's been bad luck. So Aaron Connolly and Callum Robinson are ruled out through injury. Two players who probably would have started up front, and Connolly's spoken about a lot during the week. Earlier today, James McCarthy has to pull out of the squad. An hour before kickoff, there's no Seamus Coleman in the squad. He's had some sort of a reoccurrence, potentially of that hamstring injury. Could miss the three games. John Egan has to come off after 12 minutes. So we're looking at a defence at the moment of Christie at right back, Darragh O'Shea and Shane Duffy at centre back, and Matt Doherty at left back. And you do wonder how long these results can keep going against Ireland under Kenny before it really starts to affect the players' confidence.
Yeah, that's a fair enough question, to be honest with you. I mean, to address your first point, I think, you know, to say that Ireland shouldn't have taken the game in case they got a hiding, I mean, also Stephen could have you know, pulled off a fantastic result today. I don't think you can go around thinking like that. I don't think there's much merit in that. The game came up, and I think rather than train, you get to play against one of the top-ranked sides in the world at a fantastic stadium, and that can only be beneficial for Ireland. The downside is, of course, people are going to start asking some serious questions. Now, before, we were losing games by a goal or two, and we were playing reasonably well, and we had chances. But if you're on a hiding tonight, and this starts ticking up to like 4 or 5 or even higher, then there could be some serious questions asked after this game, or we'll put an enormous amount of pressure on the next two games coming up for him. Look, I think he should have taken the game. I don't think the players will be affected a whole pile for it. They know they're up against, as I said, one of the best-ranked teams in the world. So it can only be a good thing, really. There's a lot of lads who wouldn't ordinarily play. They're getting caps, and they're playing at Wembley. So it's a stepping stone forward, really. If that's as optimistic as I could be.
Here, listen, you're being very optimistic, I think, considering what's happening out on the pitch. For the attacking players, though, like there were... And I'm sure the text messages will start to flow in, as they did when we praised the Irish performance against Finland despite the defeat. There were signs, Damien, in the first 20 minutes. Particularly somebody like Daryl Horgan, who'd sort of fallen off the radar completely for a couple of years, has come on and done really well. Hendrick was quite influential. Ida still looks very raw. And Ireland had a lot of possession on the counter-attack in and around 20, 25 yards of the English goal, but never looked like they had any sort of a cutting edge.
No, but they did manage to retain. And then you're right, I even hear myself saying it, like they did start the game reasonably well and they did pass the ball and they still are looking to pass the ball. It still isn't back to the wall. Alan Brown is still pressing high up the pitch. The wide players are still engaging with the opposition centre-halves. It is better, but obviously it's not what we're looking for, but I think we're on the right road. It might be a longer road than what we kind of hoped for or wanted, but I do believe that this is the way forward. And if it isn't, we can always go back to what we were doing. We can always go back to just back to the wall job and just, you know, get a similar type manager or another manager with kind of similar ways to the previous managers. And we can always go back to it. There'll be no major shift there. But I just think we need to persist with this, give Stephen a fair crack of the whip. People were expecting this to be overnight, that maybe we would be further along the road, but I still think we've made progress, absolutely.
One of the other issues Stephen Kenny has is because of the injuries, because of the COVID issues, God knows what his best 11 is. He's going to probably now be going into the World Cup qualifiers, even still not having any real idea what his best 11. Like, if you're looking at this run of, seven games into Stephen Kenny's reign, who are the players that have actually stood out and have put themselves in the mix that when he's picking, say, for example, it is a Denmark again and a World Cup qualifier in March and everyone's available, who put their hands up and said, you've got to pick me?
Yeah. Well, I think his strongest team, we all know, bar one or two, you know, I know he has issues at right back, but what's key for me is there's been a style that he's kind of stuck with throughout the seven games. And a way that he's want to do things, and that's what you want. You want an identity as a national team, and a lot of players are playing now, as I said, that you wouldn't particularly would say would be in his strongest 11, but they're gaining experience, and you might need them for when you play against the Denmark, and these lads feel part of it now because they are playing games for Ireland. So I take that as a positive. I mean, the starting 11 probably picks itself if everybody's fit, you know. I mean, everybody kind of knows what that is, but you know, I just think that it's important that he's kept the style, he's kept the shape, and he's kept to his philosophy of what he wants to do. And I think that's only good for Ireland moving forward.
James McLean is on 3 seconds before he gave away a free kick. But it was just a little nibble. It was just a little nibble. It was nothing too nasty. England have made changes as well over the last few minutes. At one stage, Tyrone Mings was basically playing as a number 10 for them, is the confidence that England are playing with right now. England are a lot of people's favourites for Euro 2020. They definitely have depth. You do look at their potential starting 11 and they sort of have half a team of world-class players and half a team where there's a lot of issues. In that front three and the backup is as good as you will get.
Yeah.
But they've no goalkeeper. They ain't got any centre halves. Have they got a left back? Have they got a midfield?
I don't know. But, yeah, absolutely. I think they beat Belgium recently. So, I mean, you can say that they will probably go into the tournament as favourites. When it comes to the crunch, I think they are short of goalkeeper and it might let them down. I mean, here you see Tammy Abraham coming on and you know, he's probably third or fourth choice centre forward at the minute. So they have got strength and depth all over the pitch. And goalkeeper is probably their only weakness for me, to be honest with you. I think they have kind of everything else. Whether or not they can actually get it over the line and get it done in a major tournament remains to be seen. But he's certainly building that way and building momentum and building confidence and building a way about England that is a little bit menacing, to be honest with you.
Mm. All right, 3-0, 62 minutes gone. There's a couple of games of real importance going on. One of them up in Belfast, Northern Ireland 1-0 down against Slovakia still. Defensive mistake in the first half, letting Slovakia in. So they are on the verge of qualifying for Euro 2020. Remember, they will go into the group with Spain, Poland and Sweden and will play a couple of games in Dublin, provided the supporters are allowed in the game. Some people, Damien, have spent £125 a ticket on those games. Some people will have spent £125 a ticket, Damien, to see Slovakia against Poland. Some of those people, Damien, are me.
Well, I suppose if Northern Ireland were in it, you'd definitely have a buyer for it.
Well, exactly.
You know, there might be enough Polish around Dublin that you might be able to flog the ticket that way as well. But see, that's the optimism we're looking for. It's what we want.
Scotland also on their way to Euro 2020. 1-0 up away at Serbia. It'd be a huge win for Scotland, who've really been in the doldrums for years at this stage. But Ryan Christie has given them a 1-0 lead in Serbia. 7 minutes to go in those games. Iceland 1-0 up away at Hungary. North Macedonia have already qualified. They beat Georgia in their playoff game. Couple of other things we want to touch on, Damien. Actually, talking of England and talking of Gareth Southgate, he was speaking today about dementia, which has become a big story again in recent weeks around football. Tony Cascarino was on OTBAM here last week talking about it and his fears of early onset dementia and Alzheimer's affecting footballers. Gareth Southgate said today that, of course, at my age, having headed a lot of footballs, I do have concerns, but I also recognise that whenever I took the field, I was taking the risk of injury short or long term. And I knew that, and I would have always wanted to have the career and the opportunity to play, even if it meant longer term, that there might be physical issues for myself or health issues. Most athletes will go that way, I think. That's not to undermine the situation. In terms of the link, there is research going on. It's a bit inconclusive at the moment, which is a bit frustrating for everybody because we would love to have a clear solution. So, of course, it's a concern for everybody and we have to keep supporting that research. Part of the issue with dementia is age, and one of the positives of being involved in sport is that people tend to live longer, they're healthier, and they do live longer. Slightly different, well, very different, I would say, from what Tony Cascarino was saying and the fears that he has and some of the conversations he's been having with people of his age who feel they are suffering the start of the process of Alzheimer's or dementia. You have headed a lot of balls in your day. Is this something that concerns you? Is it something you think about?
No, it doesn't concern me. I have thought about it, yeah. The reason it doesn't concern me is, I suppose, first and foremost, footballs are different from when I played. Pitches were different. You know, everything was, it was an awful lot better. It doesn't take away from the fact that I have headed an awful lot of footballs, have had several concussions. But I think it's also worth bearing in mind that dementia is the number one killer in the UK. It's the biggest. So, and I know this, there was a study done that footballers are 3.5 times more likely than a member of the public to get it. But if it's the biggest killer in the UK, there's a likelihood that people are going to get it anyway. So you need to filter out, you know, which people got it as a result of heading footballs and which people were going to get it anyway. Is it accelerated? Does it mean...
I think that's what this study from the University of Glasgow that you mentioned seems to have discovered. It was based on over 7,500 former footballers, and as you say, 3.5 times more likely to die from dementia, 5 times more likely to suffer from Alzheimer's, 4 times more likely to experience motor neuron, and double the chance of developing Parkinson's.
Yeah, I mean, look, I take those on board. I don't actually agree with Gareth Southgate there. I think that if somebody had told me at the start of my career that there was a fair chance that you were going to get Alzheimer's or dementia in your 50s or even your early 60s, then I think it was something you'd have to consider. And I think if that is proven to be, then something will obviously have to be done with heading in football. I'm not saying that you'd outlaw it, but, I mean, something would have to be done, yeah.
I guess it has been done as well. I know up coaching the under-8s, no heading is allowed at the moment at that level. I think it's either under 10 or under 12 at the moment. And you imagine it's only going to get older and older. Yeah. Have you any side effects from your concussions?
No, nothing right now. I'm sure my missus will probably tell you different, like, but but no, not particularly. I don't feel anything. But again, I'm only 39, so I can understand Cascarino's fears. I mean, he's getting to that kind of the edge of the age bracket, really, where it's potential. It could, you know, even if he gets it a couple of years younger, but. You know, it's not something I worry about, but I'm only 39. Maybe when I get to Cascarino's age or somebody does prove something, maybe it would start concerning me then. But as I said, just to reiterate there, I wouldn't necessarily agree with what Gareth Southgate said there, that, you know, even if he knew the risks before he started football, he still would have continued just for the chance to play. I think that would be absolutely crazy if it's proven that you know, it's accelerating it by 10, 15 years.
We saw John Egan go off in this game with what looked like a concussion as well. He had an accidental collision with Conor Hourihan. Over the course of your career, did the attitude to concussion change a lot?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, towards the end, you know, you got tested for concussion, you know, first day of pre-season. You know, that baseline test and stuff. So if you did have one, they could test you in the season and things. So that side of it definitely did. You know, I remember playing in games where you'd get a bang on the head and the physio would ask if you're okay and you're not, like, but he would never ask you the, and this isn't a reflection on any of the physios, this was like, you know, just the time it was, you know, and it wasn't that long ago, I'm talking like, you know, mid-2000s really, where, you know, the physio would just kind of help you off and help you gather yourself and then let you back on, unless you were openly displaying signs of concussion or you had been knocked out and the physio had to bring you around. But sometimes you black out for a couple of seconds and you come back around and you're on the ground. You know, that's happened to me a lot of the times. You go up for a header and you get caught in the face and you are out before you hit the ground and you don't remember hitting the ground. But by the time the physio gets on, you've kind of come around, you know. And then you'd always make sure that you'd look at the scoreboard to check the score because, you know, that's the first question he's going to ask you. So that was kind of the attitude of concussion and how it's changed. You know, absolutely, the physios now won't take any risk. You even saw with Dr. Byrne there, you know, that they called to take John off pretty much straight away when he asked for the physios to come on. He tried to play on but realised, you know, he seemed to be looking at the lights, so maybe the lights were extremely bright for him. I know that is possibly a side effect or something like that. I know he was looking up a lot or maybe had blurred vision possibly. So, but again, Alan didn't perform any tests or anything. He just whipped them off straight away just to make sure. But yeah, definitely attitudes have changed.
Still, England 3, Republic of Ireland 0 at Wembley. There's 20 minutes left. Ireland are about to make another couple of changes. Northern Ireland have equalised an own goal from Milan Škriniar for Slovakia. So it's Northern Ireland 1, Slovakia 1. They're into the final minute there and it looks as though it's going to go to extra time in Windsor Park. There might be value in those tickets yet, David.
That's what I was like, dude, that's right.
Scotland 1-0 up against Serbia. That one's into the final minute as well. And Hungary have equalised against Iceland. That's the Path A playoff. They also equalised in the last minute. So that one might be heading to extra time. Ronan Curtis has come on for Adam Ida. Frustrating night for Adam Ida. Really struggled to get himself involved in the game. And Ireland, well, a forgettable trip to Wembley. 3-0 down, 20 minutes to go. We'll take a quick break. Damien Delaney is with us. 53106, the text number if you want to get in touch on the football show.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
All the drama's in the Nations League and we're stuck here playing a bloody friendly against England. Serbia have equalised against Scotland in injury time. Luka Jovic, who hasn't been able to buy a goal for the last couple of years, equalising for Serbia. Ryan Christie thought he had Scotland on the way to Euro 2020, but it looks as though that one is going to extra time. Also looks as though it's going to extra time at Windsor Park. Northern Ireland won, Slovakia won. Milan Škriniar, an own goal, getting Northern Ireland back into it with 3 minutes to go, and it's still 1-1. They're into the 95th minute there. And what a turnaround in the Path A playoff, because Hungary equalised in the final minute and then scored in injury time to come from behind to lead Iceland by 2-1. So a dramatic ending to the Nations League. I told you it was worth the hype. Unfortunately, just not for Ireland. 3-0 down against England. 76 minutes gone at Wembley. Damien Delaney is with us. Jude Bellingham has just come on for England. 17, their third youngest player ever after Theo Walcott and Wayne Rooney. Don't know if you've seen anything of Jude Bellingham.
No, nothing, to be honest. I haven't watched a whole lot of German football this year. But it's worth knowing Alan Brown had a very, very good chance there. You know, got through one-on-one with Henderson, albeit at a slight angle. Henderson kind of came, changed his mind, almost stumbled, but good connection from Alan Brown, and Henderson saved his feet, but it's probably Ireland's best chance to date, but a very, very good one.
He's probably been the biggest beneficiary of Stephen Kenny's time in charge so far. I know he unfortunately had the misses and the penalty miss in Slovakia, but every time he's played, he's been impressive.
He's very good. I've watched him a lot for Preston as well. He's a high energy, he's a good athlete, good size, good physical way about him, and he's got a great way of timing runs forward, joining in, potentially could score a lot of goals in the right team, and obviously he's very good pressing out of possession as well, and I think he's, you know, and it's worth noting as well, Jeff Hendrick is looking an awful lot better at the base of the midfield tonight. I think his passing has been pretty good, probably something Jeff's been kind of much maligned about for a pretty long time now.
Well, Stephen Kenny has said countless times he didn't see Hendrick as that player. Now, I know he's probably been forced into it by injuries tonight, but that he didn't see him as the traditional, as it is now, six. He thought he was better facing the other way. But he seems to have settled in. Now, he is playing in a team that are 3-0 down.
Of course. But you're talking about he's took the ball off the back four, and he has played a couple of nice passes into pockets and stuff, and then he has a much better range of passing than people give him credit for, especially when he's used at Burnley the way he was, just to get up in touch with Sam Vokes and kind of be a nuisance. I think he's certainly shown himself capable tonight.
Alan Brown, one of many Cork players in the squad, there's a little bit of dominance coming Lee side, and well, listen, there's been many great Cork internationals down through the years, Damien, Roy Keane, Dennis Irwin, David Myler. It's great to see it being continued, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. He's from a great club in Cork called Ringman Rangers, and he's ploughed away there in the Championship for many a year, kind of similar to myself, really. He's had many seasons in the Championship, and that's a tough slog. You know, the Championship really is when you're playing Saturday, Tuesday. I think I had 9 years in a row playing the Championship, and it does take it out of you. But he's been brilliant for Preston for a number of years now. You know, he looks really, really durable as well, which is a quality that maybe a lot of people don't look for. But he shows up every week and he puts a shift in. And I'm delighted he's getting recognition at international level now.
Roy Keane often had a bit of a chip in his shoulder, as a lot of Cork people obviously do. But that, because he was from Cork, quite often he would get overlooked for underage squads, for various different things that, you know, as I think a lot of people from outside of Dublin would feel at underage level at football. Did you ever find that? Did you ever feel it was a little bit more difficult?
Yeah, but times have changed, you know. You know, scouting nets have been cast far and wide from when Roy was coming through, and certainly when I was coming through as well. We almost, and again, I don't want to come across like bitter anti-Dove or anything like that. I'm not, but it was always a case of it was only when we got drawn in national cup games up in Dublin. So when we got the chance to play against Belvedere up in Dublin, or we got the chance to play against Joey's or someone like that, that we felt that we were going to get in the shop window, because the scouts normally.
What was your underage club?
Avondale. Which isn't too far from Alan Brown's club in Cork as well. But you know, the scouts that used to come in from the UK would obviously just fly into Dublin and go and watch games around Dublin and stuff like that. So we always felt that that was the way. Now, international level, I don't think so. I think, you know, Brian Kerr was the main man when we were growing up. And I remember seeing Noel O'Reilly at plenty of our school ball games down in Cork. And I think Brian was brilliant for that. In you know, Brian had a good spread, really, of internationals from all over the country. But I wouldn't say I had a chip on my shoulder about it. It was maybe just a little bit more difficult for us because we had much fewer games to kind of showcase our talent, we felt anyway, than some of the Dublin lads from the traditional strong houses there in Dublin, you know.
Mm. We once played a game against Joey's in the quarterfinals of the under 15 All-Ireland Cup. We travelled up from Mayo, hope in our hearts, and got beaten 10-1. And thought we did all right. Did well to keep it at 10.
Jeez, you can't even win Sam either. I mean, just, can you do anything down there or what?
Jeez, come on, give us a break.
I know. No, listen, man. Listen, we took a lot of hidings off Dublin teams as well over the years. But I remember one of the most satisfying moments of my career was when we, when I was Cork youth team at under 18 level, we won the FAI National Cup, and I think we beat Jesus, who was it? I think it was Belvedere we played, and we beat them, and I was delighted because I think we beat them 2 or 3-1 or something like that, and I just thought that was, you know, revenge for all the years you used to beat us. But then you realise that Belvedere had lost all their best players to UK clubs by then. but I still chalked that up as a win for us.
yeah. Listen, little victories. Is gone to extra time in the two Euro 2020 playoffs, Northern Ireland and Slovakia and Serbia and Scotland. Different emotions, though, because Northern Ireland were on the way out and an own goal by Slovakia with 3 minutes to go forced it into extra time. Scotland, in injury time, were 1-0 up against Serbia and conceded, so that one's in extra time. Hungary are through to Euro 2020. Two late goals to them against Iceland, so too are North Macedonia. One of the big talking points of the internationals, again, well, COVID on one side, but injuries. Joe Gomez, it looks as though, well, he could be out for potentially the entire season, depending on how severe that knee injury is. Certainly he's going to be out for several months. The amount of games the players are playing, now you talk about the championship and playing Tuesday, Saturday. Jurgen Klopp has come out against this. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has come out against it. At the same time, they take all the TV money, is often what's thrown back in their face. Is it too much at the moment? Is it just too much football for these players?
Yeah, I think it's just crossed over, to be honest. Even, I know the argument can be made that, you know, all these teams have massive squads and stuff like that, but I think there is an awful lot of games, and I think three international games in this window is a touch greedy, to be honest. There was no need for anybody to put that on. It would have been a nice opportunity before we kind of head into the depths of winter for players just to maybe go away for a few days before their next club game. So play internationals now and maybe at the weekend, maybe one or two games, and then leave it at that. Unfortunately, you have to be very careful when you complain, because as you quite rightly pointed out there, all the TV money that's coming in and all the benefits that the players are getting are because of the TV rights, and there are a lot of contracts have been signed, you know, with TV broadcasting companies, and they have to be honoured. And with COVID, it's a condensed season, and it's not ideal, but maybe, I don't know, there's no real answer to it. You know, I understand the manager's frustration, the only soft tissue injuries, although it seems like Joe Gomez collapsed kind of with no one around him, and it seems to be some sort of a cruciate, an ACL or maybe a PCL or something like that. I'm not really sure. But and then Gareth Southgate kind of blamed it on the load of games, which I'm not sure that had a whole pile to do with it, but, you know, it's just an unfortunate one for Liverpool.
When you're playing that amount of games, do you get a sense that the body is weakening, that there's a far higher risk of injury?
Yeah, you get, I mean, you're already 24/7, you know, when you play games on a Saturday and you're in on a Sunday, and then Monday, if you're traveling on for a Tuesday night game, you know, you're in, you're training, you're on the bus, in a hotel, and you're home, and the days just kind of blur into one into the other, and it's very, very difficult. But it is hard, it really is, and there's some games the players will be in the warm-up and they'll be kind of trying to get warmed up and they can't because they're just like their body just hasn't got it in them. And they're probably the games then where they're not fully warmed up, they're going in, they're tired, there's so much strain being put through muscles that one kind of stretch or one kind of sprint you know, soft tissue injuries are a result of that. But again, I'd be slow to criticise anyone, really.
Yeah, and it's difficult for the international managers as well, because watching Ireland tonight, Matt Doherty's playing. Seamus Coleman, it now seems, has had a reoccurrence of his hamstring injury. Mm. In all likelihood, Stephen Kenny's going to need Matt Doherty to play all three games over the next 6 days.
Yeah, yeah, which isn't ideal, really. But the only thing is, he has been rotated at Spurs. Mm. So maybe, you know, there are some players there for Ireland who are not playing at their clubs, and they'll be delighted to get three games in, and they'll go back to their clubs a little bit match fit. But again, there are a lot of players who are playing every week for the club, especially the lads who have been playing European football. Now, I know we don't have a whole pile of that, but, you know, especially the England players there, a lot of them are Champions League, Europa League, and then Premier League. So it's tough, it really is. And if it's this bad already, I can only imagine the far side of Christmas, you know, January, February, before the weather turns and players see a bit of light at the end of the tunnel again. I think we'll have many more to come over the next few months.
Still England 3, Ireland 0. The game sort of petered out over the last little while. Ireland have had a couple of half chances, a couple of shots from distance. There was the Alan Brown shot. Ronan Curtis has come on and had a chance as well. So it's in 3-0. I think with the way it was going an hour into this, Ireland would probably take it. We are almost done for time. I'm surprised we got this far, that you weren't doing that Cork thing and maybe bringing up that last minute goal for Mark Keane on Sunday. Yeah.
No, you know, I got, you know what, I got my satisfaction, to be honest with you, watching the Sunday game on Sunday, watching how angry Tomás O'Shea was. I tell you, I was delighted to watch the head in him. I mean, they'd won 8 in a row. You'd think he'd be happy for us for one, like, you know, but that was my quiet moment of satisfaction, to be honest with you.
You play a bit of golf with Tomás, I think, do you?
Yeah.
Is he now more Cork than the Cork people, basically?
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's living up here now, and he pretends to be one of us. Like, but then Kerry get beat, and he soon finds his roots again quick. But I was delighted to see him that upset on Sunday.
Good. Are you going to watch the golf for the weekend?
I am, yeah. I'm going to flick over there now in a minute. That now in a few bits and pieces. But yeah, I'll kind of dip in and out of it. But I am enjoying watching it. I know it's November, and maybe the course isn't as gleaming, or the azaleas aren't out as they have been in the past. But it's still nice, and the course does look a little bit different with no crowds on it. It looks very different, actually. So it's still interesting, though, and it's great nighttime viewing for us.
Hey, and Tiger's there. Tiger is right there.
Absolutely.
4 under par, Tiger. Bogey-free 68. He is 3 shots behind the leader, Paul Casey. Of the later starters, just to get you up to date, Ricky Fowler's on 3 under par. Matt Wolfe, Adam Scott, Justin Thomas, they're all in a group on 3 under par, but nothing much happening for Rory McIlroy at the moment. He is still back on 1 over par, McIlroy. He's played 7 holes. So 2 minutes left, England 3, Republic of Ireland 0, and both those playoffs still 1-1, heading towards halftime in extra time. Great stuff, Damien. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Nathan. Talk to you soon, bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.